Okay, I'm gonna call the Water Wastewater Committee meeting for Town of Discovery Bay to order. Can I have roll call, please?
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present, with the exception of the town manager, Michael Davis.
Okay, at this point, it's time for public comments, and being that we're on a teleconference, I'm not sure what public may be with us this evening, so I'll just ask any people in the public that would like to make a comment on anything that is not on our agenda, please feel free to do so at this time. Okay, not hearing any public comments, could we verify some of the staff and consultants that are online, please?
Hi, Mike Yaraka.
Thank you.
Hi, Leslie Ho from Exisium.
All right.
Justin Chauve with Little Orphan Salmonini.
Thank you. Okay, at this particular point, I'm going to move close public comment and move to the draft minutes of our August 5th meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I have a motion to approve a lengthy meeting minute from last meeting.
Okay, and I second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And at this particular point, I don't think we have any presentations, but we have some discussion items, so we'll have staff lead us on discussion item number one, scope of work to prepare an asset management plan.
Good evening. Tonight we have Justin Chauve to discuss this item. Justin?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good evening. So what we have before you is a staff report for discussion purposes of the asset management work that we've been developing in coordination with the town staff. There is a CIP project that's been on there for a little while to develop. At one point it was a master plan, and then it has evolved into asset management, and there's some reasons for that. There's some good reasons for that, which we lay out in the staff report here. Primarily is that the master plan, if I could summarize, addresses your growth, and it addresses the infrastructure that's needed to meet that growth. And as of this time, there isn't any development proposed subdivisions that go beyond what has already been identified in the 2012 master plan. And if the town proceeds with the project for the capital improvement, you'll have the supply that you need to meet that growth. So at this time, what we're looking ahead to is a 10 to 20 year of planning to get a better understanding of the existing assets that are in the ground and that are in existence at the wells and treatment plants that provide this water supply, so that we can move forward with a way to plan for refurbishment and replacement to maintain the capacity as needed. So we lay out a scope of work here as what we call an outline and a budget, but we've given it a lot of detailed thought. This can be very easily developed into a scope of work for us at this point. And we present a lot of material in here, and I would say that's kind of the backdrop. And so I'd be curious if you'd like, I could go through the scope of work that we're describing in a little bit of detail. Mike Yaraka, do you think that would be good to
Let me perhaps give kind of a 30,000 foot, which is basically, we have all these assets in the town, we know they're aging, we know they need to be replaced at some time. How do we determine where to place our effort first? Which are the most critical items? Which one do we have to have that if we didn't have, we'd be out of water, so to speak, which is most critical? And then we need to evaluate all those items, given their age, given how often they fail, have failed in the past, given the likelihood of failure, from all this data that we'll be collecting. And from that, we'll spin out a spreadsheet, basically, which is towards the end of the that kind of shows how all this information is pulled together to provide the board with here are the reasons why we believe that these are the items that we should focus on first for renewal and replacement projects, and then, like Jocelyn said, then moving forward over a 10-year period on the rest of the project, so we can take care of these things before they become really bad problems that happen in the middle of the night and we're out of water. So that's kind of the 30,000-foot idea behind this whole program.
I'm going to tag team into you. So this is actually going to help us go from being a reactive district to a proactive district. It's going to detail out the inventory of our assets, prioritize risk and failure, forecast needs to replace assets, and implement repairs and replacement in a manner that consists with us being able to get the proper funding. So that's what we're trying to plan out for our future.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
I see with this plan, your schedule says we won't have this completed until 2022, first quarter of 2022, is that correct?
Yeah, and there's, I guess, two, that's correct. That's correct. And I'd just like to point out on that schedule, what we're considering is that there's a lot of projects taking place, a lot of work that the town is embarking on that's going to provide good information to this asset management plan. So we want to sequence the development of the condition assessments with some of these other capital projects, such as like the well 1B rehab or the filter repair, a GIS database that Veolia is developing, some pipeline projects that the board recently approved that the town proceed on. Now, all of those projects plus more are going to be providing information. So we're coordinating all of the schedules, I would say, with all of the projects. And then once we've gathered the critical information, we'll make the bigger strides in developing the condition assessments of the existing facilities toward the middle part of 2021, and then giving ourselves enough time to be working with the staff and the board as we develop the ranking and the assessment that's going to be the ultimate deliverable and the ultimate driving factor that's going to be used for planning. So we want that material to be able to be conveyed in draft form and getting input from the board, you know, holding workshops. So I would say we're also making sure we are giving ourselves enough time to do all of that.
Okay, and I thank you. I wanted to highlight that. I knew you had the answer, but I wanted to highlight that this is not a simple program project, but it's a needy one. It's very important, I believe, asset management. It's going to help us be more proactive in replacing and enhancing some of the products that we have based on historical data and records. I think it's a great thing. It's just not simple. I know that. And it'll take a while. So I'd be looking, I don't know what your plan is for, I don't see it on the chart for updates to the board, but I think that's, you know, at least quarterly, since we have about a year, maybe a little bit more than a year, year and a half. Once you get this going, you know, kicked off maybe early part of next year, we do quarterly updates to see how it's moving along.
Yeah, I think that's a really good suggestion, and we could certainly make that built into the schedule and the scope of work. Having a quarterly update and workshops.
Good.
All right.
So we would have to bring this back to the board meeting for board approval on September 16th.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, I don't have any question about it's it is a big project, and I think it is definitely needed. I'm looking at some of the information here, Justin, and it says to, this is AWWA asset management guidelines to be followed by LSCE in developing district asset management planning. So are these some case studies that your firm has already done at different facilities? Is this your first asset management plan?
No, it's not our first asset management plan that we've been a part of. We've been a part of asset management. Asset management takes many forms, I would say, as well. Certainly for the town, it's the most comprehensive plan other than the water master plan that we developed. So the attachment, the AWWA attachment, is not a list of example asset managements. It's just the guidelines that are followed by any professional who's going to be conducting this type of work. So we just want everybody to be aware that we're following the accepted practices and standards for conducting this type of work. And, you know, we've brought in the experts that are needed to help fill the gaps we're needed to define conditions. And, you know, for example, distribution system is kind of the larger lion's share of what needs to be understood is the underground. And it won't, you know, you won't be able to do a plan like this and develop a perfect understanding of when every pipe is going to fail. That's not the intent or even the goal. It's really to develop a relative prioritization based on indicators, which we're bringing in JDH Corrosion to help fill that role for the distribution, because they've done a lot of work on asset management and pipeline and determining condition assessments of AC pipe. So they'll be, for example, conducting a soil corrosivity mapping of the whole town and relating that information to similar infrastructure that they have experience with to provide that likelihood of failure, probability of failure on a relative scale amongst all the pipelines throughout Discovery Bay, giving an understanding of the metallic, you know, the ductile iron crossings. And what LSCE has is a very strong knowledge of how the system functions and what components are critical. So in the case of distribution system, it would be, for example, modeling the crossings. And we've already encountered two crossings. So what we should be doing on the crossings is saying, well, based on the information we know and some condition assessments from JDH, what is the relative likelihood of failure of the 13 crossings? And based on modeling, let's determine up front which ones play the most impact and the most role in terms of meeting fire flows and meeting the water demands through the system. And so therefore, now we already have the plan in place that describes which crossings are the most, have the most priority. And we'll also be having recommendations moving forward for cathodic protection from JDH to prolong the life. And they'll be giving us an estimated useful life. They certainly will give us an estimated useful life, which is a very important thing to go on, but it doesn't tell you the year that pipe's necessarily gonna fail, it just gives you relative. So, not to sidestep the direct question, I don't have a plan example directly for what I'm doing for Discovery Bay that I could show you as an example. I've got other clients and projects where we've done elements of all of this stuff that I could show you as examples. We're doing a pretty big asset management project for San Jose right now. We are a sub to a firm who's putting together the plan, but we're the primary sub providing all of the likelihood of failure and risk of failure for the wells and pump stations, which is the focus of that asset management plan. It's a well and pump station.
All right. Probably, I had to ask the question just so that we're on record. So probably my suggestion would be at the board meeting presentation, you don't have to go into as much detail as you just provided us at this moment, but just say this. Something along the line, we've done asset management plans before, a couple of the major cities that we've done them for, this one, that one, whatever. That would probably be sufficient to show that the firm has the knowledge to do what this proposal is suggesting. Next question I have, we get this completed here at first quarter 2022, and work will commence, and we'll manage the assets the way we've kind of been informed. Do you come back and have another, like an update, 3 or 4 or 5 years later? How does that, how does it ongoing asset management take? What, how does that work?
Yeah, it's typically done, it's typically recommended to update these every 5 years.
All right.
Or as new significant information becomes available. And I think that when, what we'll probably see here is if there are improvements that are going to be made within a 5 year period, say a mainline project, the mainline project would be able to be collecting information that can be used to reassess the condition assessments. You know, there might be some intermittent or intervals between within that 5 year mark where we'll be able to get new information to say, should we revisit what the understandings of conditions based on what we've seen from recent projects. But that's not necessarily updating your whole plan. That's just taking a look at the information that was gathered, real information in the ground relative to what was concluded in the asset management plan. But every 5 years, there should be a whole, you know, new look at it and a whole new projection of capital projects based on new information.
All right, thank you. Any other questions?
No. For the record, I just wanted to say that town engineer Gregory Shope arrived at 5:34 and general manager Davies arrived at 5:40.
All right, thank you for that update.
Okay, so this asset management plan will be conducted in 3 phases. Phase one is the level of service analysis. Phase two, condition assessment. And then phase three, plans and development. So tonight, we're just looking for some feedback to be able to bring this to the board on September 16th.
Well, my feedback is I think it's definitely necessary. It's been discussed and thought about for a number of years now, and it's time that we set the ship sail, if you will, and get it started.
Okay, great.
And even though there's a large investment, a seemingly large investment, it will save us money. It will get that back.
Well, it possibly prevent disaster also.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay, with that, we're going to move on to the scope of work for Ludorff and Scalamini on the resilience assessment.
Yeah, so we have Justin Shope to give us a brief description on the risk and resilience assessment for $25,000.
I think that someday we may make our name more easier to say.
Well, I was going to go with the initials and I couldn't find them in front of me.
Doesn't quite roll off the tongue at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday.
And you thought you got away with
that. This is a regulatory document that needs to be prepared by the town. And the scope of work that's being proposed is for LSCE to oversee and conduct and prepare that assessment. This is a new requirement for water districts to conduct under the America's Water Infrastructure Act of 2018 to do a risk and resilience assessment. It sounds like what we were just talking about, but it's different. What this is about is vulnerabilities that the system has, security issues that the system would have from natural or malevolent man-made hazards. And there's a set of criteria that need to be identified. The entire system has to be reviewed. It'll be a lot of information collection, a lot that we probably already have, but it'll involve coordination with every sector of the water district management and operation to make sure we're providing all the correct information that conforms with the regulations. So EPA did develop a tool for water districts to follow, such that if the tool is followed, all of the regulations are met. I think that the key feature, really, or key element to point out on this whole thing is that the assessment itself isn't actually submitted to EPA. The only thing submitted to EPA is a self-certification form that is signed by the district stating
They have done this review and conformed with all of the requirements under OEA and submit that to the EPA. They just need the form, that self-certification. And the you know, I think, you know, between the lines there, what that means is they don't really care what the outcome is. They just want to know that the district, the individual districts are conducting the analysis and standing by this analysis. And they developed this rule in a way to where districts can take this on. So the point of this is that the staff and the district themselves really need to be aware of what the findings are of this to understand what your risks are, your security issues that might be presented from a flood or an act of terrorism or you know, whether intentional or not, man-made hazards. So that's the intent here, is to conduct this assessment, utilizing the tool, going through their checklist, answering all the questions, and what comes from that will be a report of vulnerabilities. And we would be meeting with the general manager, the project managers, the staff, to say, this is what we're finding as we're developing this. Is this consistent with your understanding of the vulnerabilities? And is there new information we're learning here? Is this what we've already understood? It'll really organize that understanding of security. Where it goes from there, once this is submitted, is the town will have to develop an emergency response plan, which is due 6 months after this is completed. And the emergency response plan needs to consider any countermeasures that are identified in this to improve security. So we've been attending, you know, this is new regulation, and we've been going through webinars. We've been working with some other water districts on this, smaller water districts on this, and you know, we're familiar with the regulation and what needs to be done here. I think the key is that it will involve some close working with the district so that then it's not just really a pass-through document. You know, the things learned from it need to be really understood by all.
All right, thank you. Is this an annual assessment or a 5-year? What? Because I haven't had a chance to read all the detail in here, but what do we know about that, the reoccurrence of having to do this?
Yeah, it's going to need to be updated on a 5-year basis.
All right.
This is the first time it's conducted, and then it'll be updated on a 5-year basis.
All right, thank you. Questions, Director Mayor?
No, it's really a process of turning in forms, correct? Is that what I heard?
Yeah.
It's going to cost us $25,000 to give them forms.
Yeah, here's the forms.
Yeah, a lot of forms.
Well, all online.
So, I'm just a little confused on the cost, but okay, I got it.
Well, okay. I'm sorry, well, if I could kind of, there's a lot of research and data collection and that Ludorf needs to do to develop the risk and resilience assessment. So there's a lot more buildup to be able to then go fill out the forms properly.
Okay. So you're saying the $25,000 is a deal?
I'm saying it looks to be appropriate given the level of effort required.
Okay, that's fair enough. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, so the scope of work will be done with two tasks. First, we'll do research and data collection, and then Ludo Frescalmanini will prepare the risk and resilience assessment and then help us fill out the forms to submit. We are asking tonight of the committee if there is any feedback so that we could bring this to the September 16th Board of Directors meeting for approval.
I'll keep my mouth shut on how expensive it is.
No, it's another unfunded, this one I guess is a federal mandate versus a state mandate. So another reason that we have rate increases here and there.
So, no.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And With that, we'll go on to the next item. And that's going to be the scope of work for Advision, or Worley Pearson's group, for the diffuser.
Yes, so tonight we have Gregory Harris here, and he is going to introduce Advision. So we have Advision on the line to discuss this diffuser project in depth.
Good evening, everyone. This is Len Marino from the Advision Worley Group. I'm working with Gregory Harris on producing this this rehabilitation project for the outfall diffuser. And I am assuming you've all seen the staff report that Gregory wrote, and it's a pretty good collection of the costs that have been expended so far. And what the proposal that we have offered and is in front of you now is for, it's kind of an all-inclusive proposal to take care of the design, construction, bid support, and ongoing permit support to get a rehabilitated diffuser structure into the water and operating for the town approximately 1 year from now. And it includes several items in the scope of work. Project management, I'll just go through them really quickly. Project management is about 6% of the total cost. We're going to have a subcontractor do a couple of bathymetric surveys using sonar type equipment in the water. And they're going to take a survey pretty soon this fall, assuming everything gets approved, so we can get an idea of what the bottom of the river looks like so that we can begin our design work. Because the bottom of the river is changing a lot due to seasonal flows and conditions in the river are never the same. So we plan to do that. The largest part of the contract is for the design consideration. And that includes design of a more robust diffuser system than what you have now. What we have learned is that the diffuser pipe that's in the water now has suffered some damage and it has become fouled with sediment and other objects that prevent it from allowing the full throughput of effluent that for which it was designed. And furthermore, the dispersion part of it may not even be working correctly. And you have a NPDES permit issued by the State Water Board that compels the town to comply with the effluent dispersion requirements. So a rehabilitated diffuser is needed to accomplish all these things. And we wanna give you a system that's going to be robust and be able to survive in the river, and it will, so we don't have to do this again in 15 years or 10 years, whatever it takes. We want it to be something that you can have a longer life and you can live with it for a very long time. So what we're also including in the design is an onboard self-contained flushing system so that periodically the plant operations can flush the structure of this very fine sediment that accumulates in the nastiest places within this pipe that prevents the full throughput. And the flushing system will have an onshore collection system such that it can be cycled out and then trucked off-site and disposed of properly without discharge into the river. And it's that is going to be the majority of the design effort. And we have three levels of submittals that we're going to be giving to the town. We're going to have a 30% construction plan, 50%, and then 100% submittal. As part of that 100% submittal, we're going to give you a more refined cost estimate than what has been distributed today. But let me just digress for a minute. In your staff report, there was an estimated overall construction cost of $400,000 as one of the line items. That has been, since the staff report was written and distributed, we have refined that number to $261,357 to be exact. So that is a little bit more in line with the town's original CIP budget for this the whole overall replacement.
Could you repeat that number?
And that is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Could you repeat that number, 260 what?
261,357.
Thank you.
And that replaces the $400,000 line item in the staff report.
And it takes a total of 544.
The $400,000 price item was originally at
183.
So I'm confused. So
yes,
it was 183, went to 400, now it's back to 261?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Yes,
I'm not confused anymore. Thank you.
Just to give you a little history, the 183 that was derived from option 4 in the 2018 pre-design report. We provided a pre-design report for the town with four different replacement options for the outfall diffuser. The town selected option 4, which is what we're going forward with now, and that the price tag on that was the 183. That was based on dollars of year 2018. So 2 years later, we looked at it again, and we came up with 261. You have 201,000 of direct costs and indirect costs of approximately 60,000. So it's what they call a class 5 estimate. It's going to be refined to with a little bit sharper pencil when we get to the 100% stage. So I'm hoping we can keep that that number tame and in line with the original CIP budget. So and I had a couple of spreadsheets detailing the cost analysis for the construction. And I sent those to the board secretary, and they should have been distributed to you at the meeting. And if you have any questions on that, I can answer those now or later.
Okay, so this is Bill. That's kind of a pun because we're both Bill. He won't know who's talking. I have the sheet in front of me. Under estimated construction, you have 400,000, so I can replace that with 261, 357.
Yeah, it's just correct. Okay. You have the staff.
Yes, that is correct.
You have the staff report in front of you, correct?
Got it.
Bill?
Okay.
Yeah. You have the staff report in front of you that shows 400,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Just then the sum total when you go to the down, instead of being 683, it's 544. When you carry it down.
Five what?
5,000, 544,000.
544. Thank you. Proceed. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So,
let's let them ask their questions.
Well, you can explain the project a little bit, but my question will be, how common is it for wastewater treatment plants to have a diffuser along this line emptying into a river? Is this something unique, or is this something that quite a few places around the United States do this?
That's a really good question, and the answer is yes, it is a little bit unusual because you're discharging into one of the most sensitive ecosystems on the planet, and it's being watched by several different groups, including not the least of which is the State Water Board and the Regional Water Board that actually regulate the permitting. Furthermore, you're only 2 miles away from the two major water projects for the state of California and the United States Bureau of Reclamation in the Clifton Court Four Bay area. And as you know, water reverses itself and goes both ways with the tidal influence. And there is mixing, and there's a tendency for backflow. So the answer to the question is yes, it is a little unusual, and the diffuser structure that we have in the water now, and which is being rehabilitated, is pretty sophisticated. It has a big job to do. It has a lot of things that it has to disperse equitably over a broad range of flow conditions. The town spent some pretty good money back 15, 16, 17 years ago doing dispersion modeling in the river to make sure that whatever they put in would actually work, and the structure that you have there now is accepted to the State Water Board due to all of this dispersion modeling. So we didn't want to change or modify the design, make it simpler or easier to service. We just wanted to keep things pretty much the way they are, because we didn't want to have to go down that road again with the State Water Board and do a whole bunch more of dispersion modeling.
All right, then, hold up for a second. All right, so at the same time our diffuser went in, Rio Vista put in an identical diffuser. The state work was kind of over different groups at the same time. So Rio Vista has the same diffuser that we have in the river at the same time. Brentwood has one in. I think Delta Diablo has one in. And then all the Livermore Valleys, Dublin, San Ramon, there's a common pipeline that takes it all the way out to the ocean. And there's like three or four or five agencies that pile onto that pipeline. There's a diffuser at the end of that pipe too. So it is dependent on the ecosystem and what's going on, but believe it or not, right around us, there's four or five agencies that have to.
The design is similar. Site-specific, unique
right.
to that.
It's site-specific. Right. Rio Vista is almost identical. It's just maybe a little slightly shorter or something like that, but it's the same design.
All right. Thank you.
So we are looking for input to take this to the board for approval. But we are noticing that we are tracking, not as badly as my staff report, but we are still tracking over the CIP budget by around 44,000 at the moment. And but it appears to be unavoidable as construction costs escalate. There's also some uncertainty in exactly what the agencies are going to mandate. I mean, you don't have an approved permit yet, so you know they could force costs our way by making onerous requirements on the design or on contractor actions during construction. So those are unknown yet, but that's why there's a little bit of fluff put into this diffuser cost.
All right.
I believe I remember going through this a couple of years ago. We waited, it wasn't an urgent matter, and whether we ever ask how soon it would be, so it's 2 years later and now it's time.
Yeah.
Do we have any exposure letting this linger until we...
So the most critical, there's two issues. One is, you know, generally we're supposed to comply with our permit, but no one really knows we're not. But the other one is the diffuser's plugged and we don't have the capacity out of it that we're supposed to. So when we first built the diffuser, we could flow 4.3 MGD out of the treatment plant. And now we can't flow more than three. So the issue becomes, if we have high flow events or something, we can't pump out the treatment plant, and we can plug the treatment plant.
And that's a pretty dramatic drop, and
yeah.
That's all related to the diffuser.
Yeah, that's all related. So we videoed the diffuser, and like a good third of it's just plugged up a little bit.
Okay. What's the time frame once you say go? And I'm going to assume we're going to go fairly quickly now.
So all the permits are into the permitting agencies. And the holdup is them reviewing those permits. The Army Corps is going to take 12 months to review this permit. In the meantime, they're going to, if you look at the schedule, there's a schedule in there in the Avisian report on the last page. If you look at that schedule, the beginning of this is all just coordination with the public agencies. It's on 118 in the staff report, but it's right there at the end of the proposal.
Yep.
And then after some several months of continued coordination design begins, when we've got a little feedback from these guys to input into design. But the reality is we're shooting for next year this time to be able to do the work.
next year, although it says December, I think, for close the project?
Well, September 15th to be started construction, then there's going to be, you know, a period to construct it, probably a couple of weeks in the river, you know, and there's some follow-up reports and documentation,
okay,
and stuff like
okay.
that.
Okay, so back to that question, I think you started to answer it, but I'm not sure I understood it. Exposure, do we have any exposure with the state?
We don't have immediate exposure. Long term, if we have a high rate event, we can't pump it out of treatment plant.
So the exposure is against
it. So the exposure is
capacity.
Can we operate
yeah.
capacity.
Yeah.
Now we have some workarounds with the plant, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
you know the world wouldn't end, you know, but it means that people are going to go to emergency operation and try and deal with the issue that we can't get the flow of the diffuser. Right
sure.
now it handles our daily flow. And that's why we kind of got bolded and everything's fine.
Yeah.
But when we went out and inspected and then we tested, we said, hey, we can't do what we're supposed to be able to do here for the master plan.
So is this going to be done in parallel with D-Night, or are we going to try to get it completed before?
This is its own project.
It's not going to
happen. It'll be ahead of D-Night.
Okay.
Well, actually, realistically, in parallel, because D-Night would start construction maybe a month before this.
Okay,
you know?
But doesn't present a problem.
No. Yeah, it's the ones over the river, in the riverbank, and ones at the treatment plant.
Okay. Okay. How old is this? When was this put in?
2004.
Okay.
16 years.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Not a real long life in the condition it's in, so I'm going to assume Rio Vista's got the same problem.
Oh, I'm sure they have the same problem. You know, what's interesting is we tried to make it stronger. We were going to put steel cages around the little things so they couldn't get knocked off and stuff. And Fish and Game said no. Because they said, oh, the wrong fish are going to be attracted, they're going to hang out there, and we don't want stripers picking up Delta smelt going by. And, you know, so they wanted a minimalist design, which is what we have. Unfortunately, we broke off a couple of things, and really, you know, it's like six, there's like 32 diffuser ports, like six are missing. So now they see the 2-inch hole without the pipe for mud to get into. And then once the mud gets into it, it doesn't flow properly and it just piles up on top of itself. So this will have a cleaning system to help avoid
that. That was my next question. How are we going to prevent the clogging? So the new design will basically be the same, except
yeah, so
added cleaning.
The new design
system.
Will be the same on the outside, but on the inside, we're going to have a pipe inside of the pipe that we can flush backwards and flush out, because right now we don't have a way to, I mean, in theory, it should flush itself out because you're pushing water in and it's supposed to squirt it out, right? Well, once stuff settles, water goes onto the top of the stuff that's settled, and then that stuff just keeps piling up and then it's plugging out. So we're gonna have a system with nozzles that spray that mud and lift it up, and then we can bring it back up.
Yeah, agitate it and
yeah,
push it back down. Okay, okay.
All right. Okay. Satisfied me?
Yeah. I would agree it's something that has to be done, so it's time, it's here now, so I'm happy to move it forward to the board.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn.
Yes, go ahead. Is there any other questions?
No, I think you've answered everything that we could think of. Maybe there might be some more at the full board meeting on the 16th.
Okay.
So thank you
okay,
for your input.
Thank you.
Okay. At this time, we're going to give some feedback on the computer fluid dynamics modeling services for the UV plant. Staff.
And we have Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering, to present this to you.
So, as part of the master plan, we identify there is a turbulence issue reducing the capacity of our UV system below the required capacity of the master plan. And so they set a budget of $160,000 to address that issue in the master plan that's been adopted into CIP. And we have met with Stantec and done some flow testing with Stantec on site and come to the conclusion that we need to do a little shaping in the channel and probably remove the influent weir that's causing the turbulence problem and reduce that turbulence to get our capacity back. So the repairs aren't a lot, but it's kind of like you have to know what the X is. In terms of cost, they're less than $100,000. But computer modeling is needed, detailed, very, very detailed computer modeling is needed to determine what the best approach is to shaping the channel a little bit and getting what we need out of it. Our plan is to do the best we can, make it the best we can, but if we don't quite get the master plan flow, we have a backup plan to split flow between channels under high flow conditions. But we didn't want to spend a mint on trying to solve this problem. We wanted to make it better, get you a little bit better capacity. We think we can get all the way back to the master plan design capacity of 4 MGB. But if we can, we come a little short, we have a backup plan and we can operate the channels in parallel. Right now we operate it one at a time. So we have some give there. That's why we're not trying to spend, you know, $500,000 to make it perfect. We just want to make it better.
So if I recall, we turned that on sometime 3 years ago?
Yes, so we did that with the filter project. We retrofitted this channel, and as part of that, we did this testing that we're talking about. And it worked great up to a certain flow, but beyond a certain flow, the turbines kicked in, and we're not getting the performance out of UV we're supposed to. We've had no problems with UV equipment. We have not, well, we recently had that violation, but it had nothing to do with UV. We took a bad sample, right? But other than that, we haven't had any problems with the installation of UV equipment, and it's performed nicely. But we do need to resolve it so that the plant has the master plan capacity that it's supposed to have.
So when you fired it up 3 years ago, you did see the same incident.
Yeah, it was same.
But
thing.
We must have been lower discharge water.
Well, we actually rented pumps and put the master plan flow through it.
Okay.
We don't flow the master plan peak hour flow right now.
Yeah.
So
okay.
So we rented a pump to create that situation.
Got it.
And we normally, like in dry weather, we're half that flow. Right. So, but you get a wet weather event or peak flows during wet weather, we have to account for that. We just haven't seen a lot of that heavy wet weather lately. And so we rented pumps last time. This time we used the effluent pumps and we backed up flow and then we flushed it through. And then it became very apparent that the higher flows, the turbulence definitely is there. We videoed it and we took measurements with a velocity meter in the channels at different locations. And based upon that, now we can do computational fluid dynamic modeling of the channel for the improvements.
Okay, so this doesn't surprise you, and it's one of those tweak it, tune it to get the best.
Yeah, this
you
is
can
one of those. We're going to tune it, not try and completely make it perfect.
Yes.
Right, we're going to make it better, but we can clearly be made better. Right now, there's some clear disturbances coming in. Where if we can channel the water a little better, we'll get a much higher capacity out of it.
So if you can meet the numbers you expect, our master plan will be back in effect.
Correct. Yeah, that's basically, we have to keep the physical facilities be compliant with the master plan.
Okay.
So that everybody's aware, you know, everybody knows what we got.
Okay.
We don't want a mystery, we don't have it over here.
Okay. And then the last question is, will D-Night impact this positively?
This could be done as part of the D-Night project.
And I don't mean the interruption between, once D-Night is in force, it's not going to change this.
Oh, yeah, no,
dynamics
it has nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So in terms of design, they're going to do the fluid dynamic model. We're going to design improvements into the D-Night project. That's how they're going to get built. But there was a budget of 160 set of the CIP. We're going to spend about $54,000 on modeling. We'll carry $100,000 of the budget into D-Night project to do the physical improvements.
Good.
Any other questions?
I probably could come up with some, but I'll pass.
If you don't ask me to describe the CFD,
you
know.
Yeah. All right, this again is
you got more time.
Yeah, it's another project that just needs to be done. So there's no sense delaying it. We might as well get it in the process. So again, I'm happy to bring it to the full board and see if they'll approve it.
Now you're saying 100,000, but in this I'm seeing 54.
So their proposal for the finite element modeling is 54,000. The CIP budget is 160, and we're fairly confident that the physical improvements will be 100,000 or less. So we're under the budget. Basically, we're saying wrong budget.
Got it. Okay. Good. Thank you.
We're not going to design some Taj Mahal out there. We're just going to make some simple improvements.
Good. Okay. Thank you for your presentation. Do we have any future agenda items? I think we have plenty on our plate now. All right. Well, with that, at 6:20, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.